Well, it really was a historic moment last night in the president's State of the Union address.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown coming away again from Israel, this time from Jerusalem. No place on the planet like the city of Jerusalem. I wish you were all here with me. Now, Monday night, if you heard the Monday broadcast, we had our tour group, many of the tour group folks with us. It was 10 to 11 at night and early mornings on the tour, very, very full days. And then we had a preaching meeting after that I did. But we had a great crowd. They were enthusiastic, cheering on. Last night, I saw folks were really fading. We were doing an extended Q&A, so the full tour day and then Q&A for a long time at night. And they were tired out from the program. And I said, tell you what, we're going to use a pre-recorded show. So we did that last night. Now I am recording this show in my hotel room in Jerusalem. So this is the day after the State of the Union. It is Wednesday, February 6th. But we're having a problem with our internet connection to do a live broadcast. So you don't hear everyone cheering us on, everything there. But I am coming your way from Jerusalem. And we've never done this before, tourists to Israel, two consecutive years. But we already have it on our calendar for May 2020. So if you want to pray towards something, I'll tell you, walking around Beit Sha'an today, these ancient grounds, a society that has been in existence, or a city that was populated by one wave after another for thousands of years, walking among the ancient ruins, there was a Colosseum in the midst of it. So I said to everybody, hey, why don't you sit on the seats? I mean, these ancient stone seats. I said, why don't you sit on the seats and I'll go down and preach a little bit. So we got into the scriptures and quoted scripture and encouraged one another in the Lord. It's an amazing time. And then after that, drove down to Qumran. Yeah, so Dead Sea and where the scrolls were discovered. There's so much. Every day it's just amazing what there is to see and the miracle of modern Israel with the Jewish people there who have always had strengths and weaknesses and who have had many times in our history of turning away from the Lord and many times turning to the Lord. And that's what Israel is. And it is a mixture every way. You've got the good and the bad of humanity. But I tell you, you recognize that this is a place unique. The hotel we're in before was on the Sea of Galilee. And I'm going to get to the State of the Union. I've got some very important things to share about that as well. But we're on the Sea of Galilee. And this morning, getting up before the bus left at 8:30 in the morning, and I just went outside because the wind was gusting. And I just took a 20-second video and posted it on all of our social media outlets. But you know, you just think, wow, Jesus was on these waters. Think of it. And then I did water baptisms and a couple days ago in the River Jordan. And they said, was Jesus baptized here? I said, well, we don't know, you know, the exact location in the Jordan, but for sure I'm in the same Jordan. It's remarkable. Something very sacred about it. And look, I'm not one of these people that comes back with, you know, selling you bottles of oil from the Holy Land. I'm not saying it's a sin to do that, but that's not who I am. I'm not into like sacred places. But when you walk the land, you realize, wow, these things literally happened here. Some of our folks just blown away in Capernaum, and there's an ancient synagogue. It just would have been in a place like that Yeshua taught, and sick people were healed, and he had debates with the religious leaders, and mind-boggling. And from this place and from the obscurity of just someone living in Galilee to be the most influential Jew who ever lived, Jesus the Messiah, and this movement that's touched billions of people around the world coming from here. And then we were on Mount Carmel And from there, Mount Carmel, where Elijah called down fire from heaven, and you look down, and there's Armageddon. And it's unreal. It's really extraordinary. So if you're able to make it with our group or with another group, really pray that God makes a way for you. It's a life-changing experience. One of our grads, I knew he was just on a recent tour some months back, and here he is on the tour again. And I said, how many times have you done these tours to Israel? He goes, 4. And this is within a few years. I said, really? That's a lot of money. And he said, yeah. I said, why? Well, I learned by doing things repetitively. And that's how I really get the detail and things sink in. So, boy, just very, very special, very, very moving. And then as we're in Jerusalem and we're among the very religious Jews, and obviously they would be some of the most devout people on the planet in terms of prayer, in terms of study, in terms of seeking to live a moral life, and yet not connected to God through the Messiah the way they must be, and not knowing the depth of forgiveness of sins that we experience through Yeshua's blood. So it's one of those things that people so near and yet so far. All right, the President's State of the Union. I want to concentrate on one thing and one thing only, namely the President's comments about abortion. Now look, you may be cynical. You may wonder, well, how much does he really mean this? How seriously can we take him? Well, even if he didn't mean a word he said from the heart, even if he was saying it simply to rally his base, the fact is he has consistently held to these positions through his presidency. The thing is, he has acted on these words. He has not just spoken them, he's acted on them. So whether it reflects his heart conviction, which I certainly hope, or whether he's saying it for his political base, the fact is he's acting on these things. And look, let's boil it down. What's the number one reason that I voted for Donald Trump? Yes, I had reservations because of his character. I wasn't sure he would keep his word, but I voted for him. The first reason was abortion. It was a vote against Hillary Clinton, knowing how militantly pro-abortion she has been, knowing what a friend of Planned Parenthood she has been, and knowing that she would appoint liberal justices to the Supreme Court, which would seal the fate of Roe v. Wade for a generation or more, barring divine intervention. The first and foremost reason I voted for Donald Trump was abortion, hoping he would keep his word, hoping he would appoint justices that he promised to appoint, hoping that he would be a friend of the pro-life movement, and that he has been. Now, I have not had an opportunity here in Israel to go through all of the relevant State of the Union addresses from President Reagan, Presidents Bush, so George H.W. and George W., to see what they had to say in the way of pro-life comments. Obviously, neither President Clinton nor President Obama would have made any positive pro-life statements. But I did ask a colleague who has studied much in terms of the history of the United States and our literature and Constitution, and he pointed out to me that in 2003, President George W. Bush spoke out against partial birth abortion. So this is what President George W. Bush said in a State of the Union address in 2003. By caring for children who need mentors and for addicted men and women who need treatment, we are building a more welcoming society, a culture that values every life. And in this work, we must not overlook the weakest among us. I ask you to protect infants at the very hour of their birth and end the practice of partial birth abortion. So important words, commendable words for a State of the Union address. But to my knowledge, if these were the strongest statements that have been made up until President Trump's remarks last night, then what he said last night is the strongest ever in a State of the Union address. Remember, abortion was not an issue in generations like this before Roe v. Wade. So listen to what President Trump said last night. And if you've seen the video where Chuck Schumer is sitting with this little smirk on his face as President Trump talks about the New York law, and then he makes a comment to the gentleman next to him. And then when President finishes his comments and there's a rousing applause, jumping to their feet, obviously mainly the Republicans, and then there are a bunch of Democrat women just sitting, it's the contrast is very intense. And you know that I'm a registered independent. You know that I constantly say I do not put my trust in a political party. You know that I wrote the book Donald Trump is Not My Savior. You know, that should tell you that I'm not just looking at this as some type of political battle. I know and understand ultimately that we can only see the end of abortion on demand in America when hearts and minds are changed. I fully, deeply understand that. But politics has its place. The courts have their place. The law has its place in a very, very major way. Or we would not be talking about the increase in abortion since Roe v. Wade. If the courts had no effect, then we wouldn't be talking about this, right? So here's what President Trump said. There could be no greater contrast to the beautiful image of a mother holding her infant child than the chilling displays our nation saw in recent days. Lawmakers in New York cheered with delight upon the passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments before birth. These are living, feeling, beautiful babies who will never get the chance to share their love and dreams with the world. And then we had the case of the governor of Virginia where he basically stated he would execute a baby after birth. Listen, oh, there's more. I'm just stopping there for a minute. I am so pleased that President Trump said what he said last night at the State of the Union. I am so pleased he drew attention to the New York law, which we'll come back to. Did he misrepresent it? Has it been misrepresented by critics? I am so pleased that he called out the state of New York and called out the lawmakers for celebrating a barbarous law, and that he called out the governor of Virginia for what he said. Inexcusable comments, basically saying if a baby survives an abortion, so let's say this baby is 8.5 months old in the womb, and this baby survives an abortion, well, then you keep the baby safe while the parents decide. They decide if they want to kill it or keep it alive. Horrific, inexcusable comments, but the obvious and natural outgrowth when you just let abortion, the spirit of baby killing, continue to go in its natural direction. This is what you end up with. Thank you, President Trump, for calling out these horrific things that have taken place in our country. Thank you, sir. God of light,
hear our cry. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Shalom, shalom from Jerusalem. Yes, Michael Brown, so excited to be on this Israel tour. Just driving some of the places here and seeing the Judean desert and then the Galilee and the fertile land and so much is just extraordinary in the history. And again, we've put on our calendar for next year, May of 2020, leaving the day after Mother's Day. So perhaps you can be praying into joining us, God willing, for our next Israel tour. And we've got a few more great days here before we're done. I'm not taking calls, and we don't have our tour group cheering us on and shouting and clapping in the background because of connection issues with internet. So I am coming away from Israel. It is February 6th, the day after the State of the Union address, but this is recorded just a little bit before the show. Hopefully we'll have a live audience again tomorrow. That's always fun when we can do that from Israel. Okay, the President's State of the Union comments, I want to dig into them a little bit more, just focusing on abortion, all right? So here again, what the President said, there could be no greater contrast to the beautiful image of a mother holding her infant child than the chilling displays our nation saw in recent days. So first thing, he's appealing to a mother's instincts. And then he's contrasting that with the lawmakers in New York who cheered with delight upon the passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments before birth. So he contrasts a mother's instincts with the heartlessness of the lawmakers cheering this brutal abortion law, and then describes Governor Northam's position in Virginia for exactly what it was, giving parents the right to, quote, execute a baby after birth. I mean, that is a fact. That's what he did. And then he says this, to defend the dignity of every person, I am asking the Congress to pass legislation to prohibit the late-term abortion of children who can feel pain in the mother's womb. Let us work together to build a culture that cherishes innocent life, and let us reaffirm a fundamental truth: all children, born and unborn, are made in the holy image of God. Now you say, well, a speechwriter wrote that. But he had to be willing to say the words, okay? And again, he has consistently held to a pro-life position from the campaign right through until today. I was critical of him during the campaign when he said, yeah, well, he would want the exemptions, you know, the exceptions for rape or the life of the mother, etc. And in other words, changed the Republican platform. And then he retreated from that. And he has been just strongly pro-life. Look, he's got Mike Pence right next to him. Mike Pence wrote an article criticizing Governor Northam of Virginia. And in his words, let me just scroll down to the quote. Vice President Pence said this of Governor Northam's position: it is morally reprehensible and evil. And remember, at the March for Life last month, Vice President Pence spoke to the gathered crowd in person, and President Trump addressed them live, so in a remote way, but he addressed them. These things have not been done like this before, all right? So, yeah, obviously someone writes a speech, but then you have to be willing to say it. Barack Obama would not have said this. Bill Clinton would have said this. Hillary Clinton wouldn't have said this. All right, Bernie Sanders wouldn't say this. So the fact that he said it, the fact that he rebukes New York, the lawmakers there, the fact that he rebukes the governor of Virginia, and then notice what's found in his words here. He speaks of the dignity of every person. So that means the baby in the womb is a person. You say, well, who didn't know that? Well, in point of fact, this is not the position of the pro-abortion camp. You don't want to speak of the personhood of the baby in the womb. It's just a massive tissue, massive cells. No, he's saying no. He speaks of the personhood of the baby in the womb. Then he speaks of the baby's ability to feel pain, which underscores the cruelty of abortion. And then he spoke of the unborn as innocent life. So it reminds us of the injustice of abortion. And then he spoke of all children inside and outside the womb as made in God's holy image. You say, Mike, come on. He's just playing to his base. He's just trying to rally the troops for 2020. You know, he's just sounding religious when he's not religious at all. Well, I'm not one to vouch for the president's spirituality. I hope he has a relationship with the Lord, but I have no assurance of that, and it's questionable whether there's evidence of that. He could have just been rallying the troops, but look, if he's going to keep his word and these are going to be the things he acts on, well, that's what matters most to me. Yes, it would be best if these were his heartfelt convictions, but even if they're not his heartfelt convictions, if he's committed to act on them, if he's committed to push forward pro-life, the pro-life agenda, well, then more power to him. And what about the bully power of the pulpit? The president's bully pulpit, what about the power of that? Just the words that he speaks. And look, as far as his actions, he's appointed pro-life justices to the courts. He's signed pro-life bills. He's been consistent in his stance throughout his pregnancy. So to repeat, whether he really means what he says and does is secondary. What matters is that he's both saying it and doing it. All right, now, was he exaggerating? When he spoke about the law in New York, was he exaggerating? There was a piece by Lydia O'Connor in Huffington Post, and the headline proclaimed, "Trump turns to absurd abortion imagery in State of the Union speech."
The president claimed that a new New York law would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments before birth. Now, I've got a question. Before I read more of Lydia O'Connor's article here, I've got a question. What's absurd about that imagery? If you believe in abortion right up until the moment of birth, and then you are against the Born Alive Act, you say, what's the Born Alive Act? The Born Alive Act is a bill that would say if a baby survives an abortion, then you are obligated to provide medical care for it. You think, well, of course that happens. No, it doesn't happen. Babies are aborted and they survive abortion, they're just left to die. Yes, this happens. And caregivers in certain situations are not allowed to try to care for them. Yeah, I mean, this is the murderous spirit of abortion. And if you're listening to me and you've had an abortion and you have regret and you're broken up over it, go to the Lord. Jesus died for the sin of abortion as well. If you participated in it, if you worked as a security guard at an abortion clinic, if you worked at a Planned Parenthood clinic, as one of our callers did and then got out that day, that was her last day working there by God's grace, and she's got a great testimony now, reconnected to God and thriving from what she said to me. Maybe you're like her. Maybe you're an abortion doctor and you're in your conviction now. Jesus died for the sin of abortion as well. But go to him and ask him to forgive you. Don't make excuses. Ask him to forgive you. He will. He'll wash you clean. He'll give you a new start. And he'll use you as a voice for life, or as a prayer warrior for life, or as someone who's a friend to help others give birth and have babies and be an advocate for life. But look, if you are full-blown pro-abortion person, then you believe right up to the moment of birth that if you can find a legitimate reason to abort the baby, you abort the baby. Well, it's not going to be viable outside the womb. Well, you know that. You're sure. Doctors have never been wrong on that. You're not at least going to give the baby a chance. Well, and look, if you are 8.5 months pregnant, 9 months pregnant, about to deliver, and you start to have a mental health breakdown, and you're not going to be capable of having a child, well, deliver the child, and someone will gladly adopt that child. There's the baby can survive outside the womb. There's no legitimate reason to abort it. And you say, well, what about the physical health of the mother? You can always deliver the baby. C-section is something that is not going to negatively affect the physical health of the mother. This thing is a myth that there's a legitimate reason to kill a baby at 8 months and 3 weeks for the health of the mother. Not so. Doctor after doctor will tell you not so. So why, Lydia O'Connor, Huffington Post, why is this an absurd imagery? And what's so crazy about it? The New York law would, quote, allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments before birth. What's wrong with that? If you're a pro-abortionist, what's wrong with that? Remember, President Obama promised to veto the Born Alive Act. President Clinton opposed it. President Clinton opposed partial birth abortion prohibitions, if I'm correct. Why? Well, this is going to just be another step forward for the pro-life. All these bogus reasons are brought. The fact is, it is a murderous spirit. Can't downplay that. So O'Connor dismisses Trump's claims, writing, what the bill does, the New York bill, is expand access to abortion after 24 weeks of pregnancy to women carrying a fetus that cannot live outside the womb. Previously, the procedure was available only to women at that stage of pregnancy if their health was threatened. So, cannot live outside the womb for a day, for a week, for a month, for a year? Based on that, we should just say, well, if the baby's born and is only going to live a week, why let it suffer a week? Terminate it now. It's going to live a month. Why let it just live a month in pain? Terminate it now. I mean, look, this happens in Holland where babies are euthanized and the elderly are euthanized, and obviously babies without their consent and babies often without parental knowledge, that the doctor just decides this is the right thing to do. God help the world. God help the world. We'll come back. There is much more to say. Yeah, I'm pumped up. Coming away from Jerusalem right here on the Line of Fire, your voice of moral cultural spiritual revolution.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Greetings from Jerusalem, Michael Brown. So glad to be with you. I am not taking calls today, but I am coming your way from Israel. Just don't have the tour group with me as I'm doing this broadcast, talking about the significance in the history of the pro-life movement with President Trump's comments last night at the State of the Union address, rebuking the lawmakers in New York for their celebrating the passage of a brutal bill, abortion bill there. And look, there were lots of articles saying that the abortion laws in New York were outdated and it's so good to have these new laws, even more liberal laws, whereas New York was already the abortion capital of America. New York was already aborting one out of every three babies, so every two born, one was aborted. New York City was aborting more black babies than were born, this going back to around 2012. So now, hey, all the more abortion, let it happen. They're celebrating that. Governor Northam of Virginia's inexcusable comments about infanticide. Just extraordinary that we're even having this debate, that these things are even being talked about, friends. And then President Trump calling for a bill to stop all late-term abortions once the baby could feel pain. You say, well, just stop all abortions. Hey, absolutely. You absolutely want to eradicate abortion on demand in America. And as a Down syndrome young man said, watched a great interview with him, he said, I don't want to make abortion illegal. I want to make abortion unthinkable. Yeah, that's the ultimate goal. Absolutely. And yes, that means hearts and minds have to be changed. That means for sure that laws have to be changed, that mindsets have to be changed, that our attitude towards babies, children has to be changed. Absolutely. But you often have to do things incrementally. That's often how change comes, incrementally. So here, look, if you have an epidemic of young people getting in car accidents in your city. They're getting high, they're getting drunk, they're breaking the speed limit, they're driving recklessly, they're not wearing seat belts, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you do it, and let's say you're having 100 deaths a year because of the recklessness and everything else. Well, if you can cut that 100 to 80, it's 80 too many, but thank God for the 20 lives saved. If you can cut that 100 to 50, it's 50 too many. But thank God for the 50 lives saved. That's how we have to look at this. And despite the ongoing horror of abortion in our land, the numbers of babies aborted each year are decreasing. On a fairly steady level, there has been a decrease. And public opinion continues to, there's mixed public opinion. But from what I understand, more people favoring more protection of life now than, say, even just a generation back in the early days of Roe v. Wade, when it seemed that the pro-life movement was fractured and discouraged and done. That's not the case, friends. That is not the case. So let me go back to comments from Lydia O'Connor in Huffington Post responding to President Trump's words. And she says this. What the bill does, the New York bill, is expand access to abortion after 24 weeks of pregnancy to women carrying a fetus that cannot live outside the womb. Previously, the procedure was available only to women at that stage of pregnancy if their health was threatened. All right, so what she's saying then is that what the president is talking about being new in the bill was always there. She's saying that you could abort a baby after 24 weeks of pregnancy, so right up to the moment of delivery, or as the Democratic Delegate Tran in Virginia said in the bill she was putting forth, even as the woman is dilating. Okay. If Lydia O'Connor is correct in the Huffington Post, then there was no problem. There was no problem up to now. There was no problem up to now with a woman aborting a baby for health reasons. And is noted in my article, Archdiocese of New York, this is a colleague added this for me, pointed out the Supreme Court in Doe versus Bolton defined health as all factors, physical, emotional, psychological, familial, and the woman's age relative to the well-being of the patient. So if quote, woman's health was threatened, if she just felt unable, that I can't handle another child, it's going to affect my mental health or emotional health, then she could, according to the Huffington Post, right up until the moment of birth, decide to abort her baby under previous New York law. That's what she's claiming. So here's a link in the article which notes that under the new law, women can also get an abortion after 24 weeks if their health is threatened or the fetus isn't viable. Well, this seems to be saying something different than the Huffington Post is saying, and this is the very link they provide. The bottom line is that Trump's imagery was absolutely right. Right up to the moment of birth, the baby could be ripped out of the womb. Well, here, to all those who are pro-abortion, why not own up to it? If you're going to shout your abortion, shout the whole thing. If you're going to shout your abortion whether the baby can survive outside the womb or not. Shout your abortion whether the baby's 8 weeks old or 30 weeks old. Shout your abortion either way. Boy, what a terrible, tragic moment we find ourselves in. And yet, one where the darkness is so dark, where the pro-abortion position so radical that it really, really opens eyes and has energized the pro-life movement. So with the increasing militancy of the pro-abortionists, pro-life movement is freshly mobilized. And the roles of President Trump and Vice President Pence have been highly significant as well. So I mentioned Vice President Pence live addressing last month's pro-life rally in person, Donald Trump doing it remotely, Vice President Pence writing a stinging response to Governor Northam's remarks, which he characterizes morally reprehensible and evil, and then the president's State of the Union address and the tremendous importance of what he said last night. And here, let me underscore it for you. Contrast things with this. What if Hillary Clinton had been president? Who would have been elected now to the Supreme Court? Who would have been elected to the federal courts? Who would have been delivering the State of the Union remarks? What would be said? Would it be a moment like with President Obama and God bless Planned Parenthood? Now look, friends, I want to say this again. I do not identify with a political party, meaning I am not registered Republican or Democrat. Yes, I've voted heavily Republican for years now because of the Republican platform, but I still don't put my trust in the Republican Party, and I certainly don't put my trust in President Trump that he's going to change the moral fabric of the country. How could you possibly put your trust in the President of the United States, this president, to change the moral fabric of the society? No. That is only going to come through the gospel, that is only going to come through Christian witness, that is only going to come through us, by God's grace, with his help, changing hearts, changing minds. There's no other way it is going to happen. Simple, simple, simple. Having said that, we must recognize that the Democrat Party has become increasingly militantly pro-abortion, pro-death. Remember President Clinton's dictum that he wanted to see abortion safe, legal, and rare? Those were the words safe, legal, and rare, or something very close to that. Not shout your abortion, not celebrate your abortion, but sometimes it's necessary and sometimes it's the best thing for a woman. We don't want to see a lot of it, but it should be safe, it should be legal. And obviously without stigma, I mean, that would be his mentality. And of course, he was far more militant than those words, but look at how far things have come. to this now debate. Did the governor, we're not talking some blogger, we're not talking some 15-year-old kid on YouTube, we're talking the governor of Virginia. Did he in fact give the possibility of infanticide? Those that have refused to comply with the Born Alive Act, and President Obama, again, I remind you, promised to veto it and voted against it as a senator. The fact that we're even debating these things speaks to extraordinary immorality, extraordinary hardness of heart, extraordinary deception. And just as ancient Israel sacrificed babies on the altar to Moloch, sacrificed babies on the altar to Baal, in keeping with ancient Near Eastern practice, just as ancient Israel did that, is that same baby-killing spirit. Friends, I have a book due out in September of this year. We've got a lot coming out this year. I'm just finishing now all the updates and revisions for Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, which came out originally in 92 and scheduled to be printed with it's been continuously in print since 92, but a brand new edition, revised, updated, I think is going to make the book even more powerful than ever. And some of the stuff in the new edition is even more shocking than the stuff in the first edition. But working on that, getting that out in August, but I've got a book due to come out in September about Jezebel's war with America that may be the most intense thing I've ever written. On Mount Carmel, talking about Elijah calling down fire from heaven and Elijah's conflict with Jezebel earlier this week, I talked about that. I gave a little synopsis of what's going to be in that book in the context of Elijah and Jezebel and the battle for America. Friends, suffice it to say, we're in a spiritual battle. Hillary Clinton is not my enemy. The Democrat Party is not my enemy. I'm not looking to the Republicans to bring revival to America. But I'm saying we are in an intense spiritual battle for the soul of the nation, for the life of the unborn. It's a battle that has been going on for decades. It is a battle that could go on for decades to come. But it is our sacred and holy obligation to do what is right, to stand for life, to be advocates for those who cannot speak up. God will hold us accountable. So I, for one, am thrilled that President Trump did what he did. Yes, I regret things he says and does, and I wish in certain ways he'd be a different man, but one of the most fundamental reasons for which I voted for President Trump, pro-life, that's who he was last night, that's what he did, and I commend him for it. And those that oppose the pro-life movement, shame on you. May God open your eyes and give you a heart to see.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Shalom from Jerusalem. Friends, no hype here. I wish I could push a button and have every one of you here with me in Jerusalem now. The last few days of the tour based in Jerusalem and then travel out to some other areas, but so much to see and do in Jerusalem, so much to see and do throughout Israel, absolutely mind-boggling. And for those of you who say, well, how much do you focus on the Palestinians while here? To be honest, we do dialogue with our tour group about the needs of the Palestinians and what is a just solution, etc. But this is not a political Israel tour. This is not a tour where we talk about how amazing Israel is politically. We'll talk about the good things in Israel, but then also about the needs and the lacks. But this is to tie you back to what happened in Scripture. This is to tie you back with what's going to happen here in the future. This is to make the Bible and the truths of God and the history of this land come alive to you in ways that can only happen by being here. I mean, even virtual reality can be amazing, you know, but virtual reality is still not reality. All right, so we've been talking about President Trump. We've been talking about the pro-life movement, the State of the Union address last night, and I fully understand that we have been going around certain circles for years and years and years. and in certain ways making very little progress. But progress is being made. That's the first thing I want to say. Progress is being made, and we need to rejoice in that. But how in the world are we going to see radical change come to the nation with abortion? Now look, it's very possible. It's very possible that Roe v. Wade gets overturned, and then the decision goes back to the states. And that's where we're having a lot of battles now, but this would empower the states to stand even more. And you're going to have a tremendous separation in that regard. You're going to have quite a few states that'll be abortion-free. And then who's going to live in those states? What's going to be the attitude towards life in general in those states? What's going to be the attitude towards the Bible and morality in those states? And then you have other states that are going to be abortion centers like New York is now. I mean, it's the inevitable. You're going to have pro-life legislation with pro-life governors and pro-life congresses in different states. Then you're going to have national things. I mean, this is what's going to be happening. And in this battle, it may continue until Jesus returns with steps forward and progress being made. But the point I want to make is this. Along with legislation, there must be massive revival, outpouring. There must be conversion of the lost. There must be changing of hearts and minds. There must be an awakening on a scale of which the nation has never experienced before. Now, this is crucial to hear. People say, let's just rely on evangelism. Let's just rely on evangelism. And if we evangelize people and they come to the Lord, that's how you're going to change the laws. I beg to differ. Because if you have the same mentality then as you have now, and people aren't involved and people don't vote and they don't get involved in the political system, then how law is going to change? If 10,000 more people get saved in a city, the laws change automatically. No, someone has to change them. So someone has to run for office. Someone has to vote. Someone has to propose a bill. Someone has to get on the local school board. So in other words, you still have to do something. So it is evangelism. It is prayer first. Yes, it is spiritual awakening first, but not only. It is both and. That's how things will change. Just like the freeing of the slaves, it was not only changing hearts and minds, but changing hearts and minds until a critical mass was reached. And when that critical mass was reached, that's when things changed on a national level. That's when it happened. That's when there's the Emancipation Proclamation. Of course, there was a bloody war that followed. And President Lincoln had remarked that the blood that was being shed was a payment for all of our cruelty and sin against the slaves. So, friends, I am hoping that God will work in such a way miraculously in America, and that there will not be this type of uprising against life, and that there will not be this type of violent response to pro-life. But you never know. Look, we saw in the Kavanaugh hearings just how militant the pro-abortion spirit is. And I go back again to the baby-killing spirit in the ancient world. That's what we are witnessing today. It is something very, very close to that. Let me share a quote with you. I have this in the end of my Revolution book. William Wilberforce battled tirelessly for several decades to bring about change in America. He successfully abolished the British slave trade, eventually slavery itself in Great Britain and her colonies. In 1804, he helped form the British and Foreign Bible Society. He supported missions. He fought to improve the condition of the poor and prisoners. And he came to faith at the age of 25, and it was through the influence of John Wesley. And he wanted to do among the higher classes what Wesley had done among the lower classes. And he formed the Clapham sect, which, quote, sought to do for the upper classes what Wesley had done for the lower classes. That was his heart. And he labored for years and years, got into Parliament. And one time after another, defeat, 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 defeat. I mean, once there were sufficient votes to pass it, but the opposition was, you know, able to get everybody to go to some other event, you know, skip Parliament so he didn't have sufficient votes. And, you know, just what is that kind of disappointment? Well, finally, they win. Finally, victory comes. And Charles Spurgeon said this, so I want to share this with you. Charles Spurgeon said, "A healthy church kills error and tears in pieces evil." Not so very long ago, our nation tolerated slavery in our colonies. Philanthropists endeavored to destroy slavery, but when was it utterly abolished? So let me pause and comment on what Spurgeon's saying. Yeah, there were people of goodwill and people of good conscience who sought to stop the growth of slavery, who sought to stop the industry of slavery, the evil of slavery, but they weren't successful. Here's what Spurgeon says. When was it utterly abolished? It was when Wilberforce roused the Church of God. And when the Church of God addressed herself to the conflict, then she tore the evil thing to pieces. He said, "I have been amused with what Wilberforce said the day after they passed the Act of Emancipation. He merrily said to a friend when it was all done, 'Is there not something else we can abolish?' That was said playfully, but it shows the spirit of the Church of God. She lives in conflict and victory. Her mission is to destroy everything that is bad in the land." No, no, no. Not attack people, not hurt people, not destroy people. Spurgeon was a preacher of the gospel, not a military leader. Spurgeon was a preacher of the gospel, not a member of ISIS. Spurgeon preached the cross and the love of God and transformation through Jesus. But he recognized that the gospel attacked the immorality of the age, that the gospel attacked the injustice of the age. Here, go back again to the days of slavery. What do we say of the churches that were pro-slavery? What do we say of the churches that were silent during slavery? What do we say of the churches that supported segregation? We see them as hypocritical. We see them at the very, very, very least as having a severe and ugly blind spot. Of course they should have spoken. Of course they should have acted. Look, we commend those who spoke up and acted in Nazi Germany and the surrounding countries, the so-called righteous Gentiles, the Corrie ten Booms, the people who risked their lives to save Jews. On the one hand, when I think of the fear that the Nazis would instill, it would have been so easy, so incredibly easy for people to just say, "Hey, we're Christian, but we're just going to keep quiet. We're going to pray that God will intervene. But are we going to rescue Jews? Or are we going to risk our lives? Our kids are going to die. Our grandparents are going to die. We're going to suffer in a concentration camp. Is that right? Should we endanger our own families?" Look, I could understand how fear could do that to you. I could understand in the natural why so few would act out of the terror of what would happen to them. But then you see the evil. Then you see the Jewish families being carted off to the concentration camps. You see little Jewish children starving to death in the ghettos. You see the evil and you think, "I have to do something. I have to do something." And that's why we must act today. Friends, don't let the pro-life passion, the pro-life momentum diminish in the least right now. This is a critical moment to stand. This is a critical moment to act. This is a critical moment to pray. This is a critical moment to seize ground that's been taken and to change hearts and minds. Let the debate begin over infanticide to expose the utter horror of the evil of abortion. Let the images be seen, the ones that are so disturbing, the images of aborted babies that when friends post them on Facebook, their Facebook page gets shut down. Let us expose this. Let us show the ultrasounds of little ones in the womb and show their humanity. Let us hear from those who've had abortion as they agonize over their decision. And let's come with a message of forgiveness and freedom and restoration for all. Let's come with a message of mercy and hope for all. Regardless of what sin was committed, Jesus will forgive. Jesus will cleanse. If you humble yourself and turn to Him, He'll have mercy on you, even for the sin of abortion, and He'll heal your life. Back with you tomorrow